Callaghan gestured toward the cowled figure on his right.
You said I had no heirs, but it was on Eunice Scythe, with the help of the Maliban, that my son was born. I like to think of him as my son. And it was on Eunice Scythe that I learned many new powers.
Then it is you. You are the ally of the Maliban, the one they mentioned.
I think I must be.
Callaghan's smirk was so self-satisfied that Coram drew his sword and ran towards him. But then the flat of Gofanon's axe slammed against his armored chest, and he was knocked down onto the filthy beach, while Callaghan shook his head in mock despair.
Direct your anger at yourself, Prince Coram of the Silver Hand. You have received poor counsel and followed it. Perhaps if you had been at Caer Lewt to lead the Mabdon, the battle would not have gone so ill.
Coram began to rise, reaching for his sword, which lay a few feet from him, but again black-bearded Gofanon used his axe to push the sword away.
Prince Coram, you must know that the surviving Mabdon blame you for their defeat. They call you Turncoat. They believe that you joined sides with the Foy Miore and fought against them.
How could they believe that? Now I know you for a liar, Callaghan. I was here all the time. What evidence have they?
Oh, they have good evidence, Prince Coram.
Then some glamour was put upon them. One of your illusions.
Oh, you do me too much honor, Prince Coram.
Jari O'Connell, was he not there?
Little Jari O'Connell joined with me for a while. When he realized how the battle went, then he vanished. Doubtless shamed at his decision, though I considered it sensible.
Coram felt even more distressed by the knowledge that his enemy Callaghan was witness to his grief, but he could not help himself.
Callaghan, escort your company to the Great Palace. We are anxious to see what you have brought us, and if you have kept your bargain.
The Great Palace was no longer a palace, but a place where a palace had once been. The huge pine tree, which stood on the very top of Eunice Scythe's only hill, had once grown at the center of the palace, but now there were only traces of the original foundations. The mortals and the Shi sat upon grass-covered blocks of masonry, while Sactric's mummified figure stood.
I stand upon the spot where our great throne once rested. It was carved from a single gigantic ruby.
Not something I readily believe.
Nor I.
You will see, Emperor Sactric, that I have fulfilled the last part of our bargain. I have brought you Gofanon.
Sactric inspected the expressionless face of the she-dwarf.
I admit, the creature resembles that one with whom I desired to meet again. And he is completely in your power.
Completely.
Callaghan brandished the little leather bag, which Coram remembered from when he himself had bargained with the wizard. It was the bag into which Gofanon had spat. It was the bag which Coram had given to Callaghan, and whose contents Callaghan had used to secure his power over the great dwarf. Coram looked at that bag, and he was filled with hatred for Callaghan, even more intense than he had felt before. But his hatred for himself was even stronger. He buried his face in his hands.
You could not know, Coram.
It was an attempt at comfort, but Coram could not hear the words.
Then, Callaghan, give me the bag which contains your power.
The decaying hand reached towards Callaghan. But Callaghan replaced the little bag in his robe and smiled.
The power must be transferred willingly, as you know, or 'twill cease to be. I must first be sure, Sactric, that you will complete that part of the bargain which is yours.
We give our word rarely, we of Maliban. When we give it, we are bound to keep it. You requested our help first in destroying what remains of the Mabdon race, and then in imprisoning the Foy Miore in an illusion from which they will be unable to escape, leaving you free to use this world as you feel fit. You have agreed to bring us Gofanon and to help us leave this plane forever. Well, you have brought Gofanon, and that is good. We must trust that you have the power to help us depart this world and find another, pleasanter place in which to live. Of course, if you do not succeed in that, we shall punish you. You know this also.
I know it, Emperor.
Then give me the bag.
Kaliton showed considerable reluctance to comply as he once more drew out the leather bag, but at last he handed it to Sactric, who accepted it, while the she-dwarf's friends looked on in misery.
Now go, Fanon. Listen to your master, Kaliton. You have a new master now. It is this great man, this emperor, this Sactric.
Kaliton stepped forward and took Gofanon's huge head in his jeweled fingers and turned it so that the eyes stared directly at Sactric.
Sactric is your master now, and you will obey him as you have obeyed me.
Sactric is my master now. I will obey him as I have obeyed Kaliton.
Good.
Kaliton stepped back with a look of considerable self-importance on his handsome face. He indicated Corum and Ilbrek.
And now, Emperor Sactric, how do you intend to dispose of my two enemies here? Would you allow me to devise a means?
I am not sure yet I wish to dispose of them. Why slaughter good animals before they need to be eaten?
Corum saw Ilbrek pale a little at Sactric's choice of phrase, and he himself found the words distressing. Desperately, he tried to devise a method of capturing Sactric, at very least, but he knew that Sactric was able to enter and leave his mummified corpse at will, and to invoke lethal illusions at a moment's whim. There was little either he or Ilbrek could do, but pray that Kaliton would not get his will.
Well, they must die at some time. Corum in particular.
I will not discuss the question until I have tested Gofanon. Gofanon, do you remember me?
I remember you. You are Sactric. You are now my master.
Oh, it pains me to see my old friend brought so low, Ilbrek.
And you remember that you were once here before, on this island you call Uniskaith.
I was on Uniskaith before.
The dwarf closed his eyes.
Oh, I remember. The horror of it.
But you left again. Somehow you overcame all the illusions we sent you, and you went away.
I escaped.
But you took something with you. You used it to protect yourself until you could leave. What became of that which you took?
I hid it. I did not wish to look at it.
Where did you hide it, dwarf?
I hid it.
Gofanon's face now had upon it an idiot grin.
I hid it, Lord Sactric.
That thing was mine, as you know, and it must be returned to me. I must have it again. Ere we leave this plain, I shall not leave without it. Where did ye hide it, Gofanon?
Master, I do not remember.
You must remember.
Sactric wheeled, pointing a finger from which dusty flesh dropped even as he spoke.
Kaliton, have you lied to me?
Kaliton was alarmed. His air of complacency had disappeared to be replaced with a look of anxiety.
I swear to you, Your Majesty, he must know. Even if 'tis buried in his memory, the knowledge is there.
Sactric now placed his claw-like hand upon Gofanon's broad shoulder, shaking the dwarf.
Where is it, Gofanon? Where is that which you stole from us?
Buried. Buried somewhere. I put it in safety. There was a charm to ensure it could never be found again, save by me.
A charm? What kind of charm?
A charm.
Be more specific, slave! What did you do with that which you stole from me?
Ilbrek, it is plain that the Emperor of Maliban has no wish to reveal to us what Gofanon took.
If we listen carefully,
we might discover some weakness in this apparently invulnerable sorcerer.
I took it away, Master. She...
Be silent!
Sactric wheeled to address Kaliton again. The wizard looked ill.
Kaliton, upon your word that you would deliver Gofanon to me, I helped you make the Karak. I helped you infuse life into it as you desired. But now I find that you deceived me.
I swear to you, Lord Sactric, that I did not. I cannot explain the dwarf's inability to answer your questions. He should do all you tell him without hesitation.
Then you have deceived me, and deceived yourself moreover. Something has died in the she's brain. Your magic has proved unsubtle. Without his secret, we cannot leave this plane. would have no desire to leave this plane. Therefore, our bargain ends.
No!
Kaliton rose, seeing his own terrible death suddenly appearing in Sactric's cold, blazing eyes.
I swear to you, Gofanon has the secret. Let me speak to him. Gofanon, listen to Kaliton. Tell Sactric what he wishes to know.
You are not my master now, Kaliton.
Very well. You must be punished, wizard.
Karok! Karok! Destroy Sactric!
The hooded figure rose swiftly, tearing off its outer robe and drawing a great sword from a scabbard at its belt.
No!
The Karok had a Vardok face. It had a single eye and another covered by a patch. It had a hand which shone like silver and another made of flesh. It wore ornate armor almost exactly the same as Khorum's own. It had a conical cap with a peak, and engraved over the peak in Vardok lettering was a name, Khorum Jylan Irse, which meant Khorum, the prince in the scarlet robe. And the scarlet robe, Khorum's name robe, flapped on the Karok's body as it strode towards Sactric. And the Karok's face was alike in every major detail to Khorum's. And Khorum knew now why Artek and his followers had accused him of attacking them on Eunice Scythe. And he knew why the Mabdin had been deceived into thinking that he fought with the Foimiore against them. And he knew, too, why Kaliton had made that bargain with him long ago for his name robe. Kaliton had been planning all this for some time. And looking upon that face that was not his own face, Khorum's veins became cold. Now Sactric disdained to use his magic against the Karok, the doppelganger.
Perhaps his magic is useless against a creature which is itself an illusion.
Kaponin, defend me!
Obediently, the massive dwarf leapt forward to block the Karok's path, his giant axe swinging.
I believe that at last I look upon the brother of the old woman's prophecy, the one whom I have to fear.
There! There is the Karok, Khorum! There is the one destined to kill you and take your place! There is my son! There is my heir! There is the immortal Karok!
But Khorum ignored Kaliton and watched the battle as the Karok, its face expressionless, its body apparently tireless, aimed blow after blow at Gofanon, who parried with his double-bladed war axe, the war axe of the Shi.
Gofanon is tiring. Soon he will fall to the Karok's sword.
You hurry to defend me too, Prince Khorum!
Khorum darted a look of hatred at the corrupt form of the Maliban before he brought his sword, the cross-forged sword which Gofanon had made for him, down upon the shoulder of the Karok and made the thing turn.
Fight me, changeling! It is what you were created to do, was it not?
And he drove his sword at the Karok's heart, but the creature stepped aside and Khorum could not stop his own momentum. The blade went past the Karok's body and buried itself in flesh, but it was not the Karok's flesh. It was Gofanon's flesh that the sword had found, and the blade had pierced his shoulder. Gofanon fell back, and it must have been that the sword blade had lodged itself in a bone, for the movement of the dwarf's falling wrenched the sword from Khorum's hand and left him without weapons. The Karok, with a terrible fixed grin on its face, a glitter in its single soulless eye, advanced to slay him. Ilbrek now drew his own bright blade retaliator and came striding to Khorum's assistance. But before he could cross the space, Kaliton rushed past him and began to flee down the hill, having given up any notion of defeating Sactric and plainly hoping to reach his boat before the Maliban realized he had gone. But Gofanon saw Kaliton and he raised his hand to grasp the sword he had made, which now stuck in his shoulder, and he was careful not to touch the handle, and he wrenched it from the wound. He turned the sword, poised it, then flung it with great force after the retreating wizard. The moon-colored sword flew across the distance between Gofanon and Kaliton. Kaliton continued to run for some moments, apparently unaware that the sword pierced his body. Then he faltered, then he fell.
Karok! Karok! Avenge me! Avenge me, my only heir! My son!
The Karok turned, its expression softening, searching for the source of those words, its sword falling to its side. At last, its eyes found Kaliton. He was still not dead, but was attempting to get to his knees and crawl on towards the shore and the boat in which, such a short time before, he had sailed in triumph. Khorum felt sure he detected genuine misery in the Karok's expression as it realized the plight of its dying master.
Karok! Avenge me!
And the Karach began stiffly to walk down the hill in the wake of its master until it reached the enfeebled Kaliton, whose fine occult robes were now all smeared with his own blood. It seemed to Coram that he himself paused beside the wizard and sheathed his sword. It was as if he watched a tableau from the past or the future in which he was the main actor. It was as if he dreamed, for he could not bring himself to move as he watched his double, the Karach, the changeling, stoop and look at Kaliton's face in puzzlement, wondering why its master groaned and writhed in this way. It reached out to touch the sword which jutted from Kaliton's shoulder blades, but then it withdrew its hand as if the sword had been hot. Again it seemed puzzled.
Karach! Karach, hooray!
The Karach put its head on one side and listened carefully. Kaliton's dying hands found a rock. Painfully, the wizard pulled his body onto the rock, and the moon-colored sword was pushed free. Then the Karach bent to lift its master, its creator, in its arms.
Gathani, I am still your master. Go after the changeling and destroy it.
It is not yet time to slay the Karach. Besides, it is not my destiny to slay it.
Gathonin, I command this!
Saktrik held up the little leathern bag which contained his power over the she-smith, but Gathonin merely smiled and began to inspect the wound which the sword he had forged himself had made in his shoulder.
You have no right to command, Gathonin.
So I have been fully deceived by the mortal wizard. I shall not allow my judgment to be clouded so again.
Now the changeling Coram was carrying its master to the beach, but it did not walk towards the boat. Instead, it began to walk directly into the sea, so that soon its scarlet robe was lifted on the surface of the water and surrounded both the creature and the dying wizard like so much thick blood.
The wizard did not deceive you willingly. You must know that truth, Saktrik. I was no more in his power when I came here than I was in yours. I let him think he commanded me, for I wished to discover if my friends were still alive, and if I could help them.
They'll not live for long, I swear. And neither will you, for I hate you most deeply, Gathonin.
I came of my free will, as I said, for I would make the bargain with you that Kaliton hoped to make.
Then you do know where you hid that which you stole?
Of course I know. It is not something I could easily forget.
And you will tell me?
If you agree to my conditions.
If they are reasonable, I will agree.
You will gain everything you hope to gain from Kaliton, and you will gain it more honorably.
Honor? That's a maddening conception.
You have much to do now, Coram, if you are to make amends for your stupidities. Go fetch your sword.
And Coram obeyed, his eyes still fixed on his double. The body of the wizard had sunk completely beneath the waves, but the head and shoulders of the changeling could still be seen, and Coram saw that head turning to look at him. Coram felt a shock run through him as single eye met single eye. Then the changeling's face twisted and its mouth opened. Coram was stopped in his tracks just by the stone where the sword lay. Then the Karach continued on until its head had disappeared under the surface of the sea. For a second or two, Coram saw the scarlet surcoat, his name robe, drifting on the water before it was pulled down and the Karach was gone. Coram bent and picked up his sword, Gofanin's gift, and he looked at its strange silvery whiteness. It was now smeared with his old enemy's blood, but he was glad, for the first time, that he held the sword.
Now I know I have a name for it, though it is not a noble name, not the name I would have expected to give it. But it is the right name. I know it, just as Gofanin said I would know it when the moment came.
He carried the sword back to the top of the hill where the single pine grew, and he lifted the sword towards the sky.
I have a name for the sword, Gofanin.
I know that you have.
I called the sword traitor, for the first blood it drew was from he who forged it, and the second blood it drew was from the one who thought he was that man's master. I call my sword traitor.
And the sword seemed to burn more brightly, and Coram felt renewed energy flow through him.
Was there another time, another sword like this? Why does this sensation seem familiar?
And he looked at Gathonin, and saw that Gofanon was nodding, that Gofanon was satisfied. He laid a large hand against the wound in his shoulder.
Traitor.
Now that you have an aimed sword, you will need a good horse. They are the first requisites of a war knight.
Aye, I suppose they are.
What is the bargain you seek to make with the Malaban, Gofanon?
Gofanon was still staring at Corum.
An apt name, Corum. But you give it a dark power now, not a light one.
That must be.
Gofanon shrugged and gave his attention to Sactric.
I have what you want, Sactric, and it shall be yours. But you in turn must agree to help us against the Foimiore, if we are successful, and if our great Archdruid Amerigan is still alive, and if we can recover the last of the Mabdan treasures which still reside at Caer Lud, then we promise that we shall let you leave this plane and find another better suited to you.
Sactric nodded his mummified head.
If you can keep your bargain, we shall keep ours.
Then we must work speedily to accomplish the first part of our task, for time runs out for the beleaguered remnants of the Mabdan army.
Kaladin spoke the truth.
He spoke the truth.
But Gofanon, we knew you to be wholly in the wizard's power while he held that bag of spittle. How could it be that you were at no time in his power on your journey here?
Because the bag did not contain my spittle.
Do you expect me to accompany you back to the mainland?
Aye, that will be necessary.
You know it is hard for us to leave this island.
But it is necessary. At least one of you must come with us. And it should be the one in whom all the power of the Malaban is invested. Namely, yourself.
Sactric thought for a moment.
Then I will need a body. This one will not do for such a journey. Best if you're not trying to deceive the Malaban, Gofanon, as you deceived them once before.
It is not this time in my interest. But know you this, Sactric. I have no relish for making bargains with you. And, if it were only my decision, I would perish rather than give you back what I stole from you. However, the die has been cast so thoroughly that the only way to save the situation now is to continue with what my friends here started. But I think it will go ill for some of us at least when your full power is restored to you.
Sactric shrugged his flaking, leathery shoulders.
I would not deny that, she.
The question remains, how is Sactric to travel beyond Eunice Scythe if the world outside is inhospitable to him?
I need a body.
Sactric looked speculatively at the three.
Few human bodies could contain that which is Sactric. It is a problem which, for a solution, might require an act of considerable self-sacrifice on the part of one of us.
Then let that one be me, gentlemen.
Ha! Jari!
Corum saw to his great relief that it was Jari O'Connell, the self-styled companion to heroes, as cocky as ever, leaning against a rock with his wide-brimmed hat over one eye and the small, winged black-and-white cat on his shoulder.
Jari! How long have you been upon this island?
I have witnessed most of what has taken place today. Very satisfactory.
Jari winked at Gofanon.
You deceived Kaladin perfectly, Gofanon.
I should not have had the opportunity if it had not been for you. It was Jari who, as soon as it was obvious that the day was going badly for the Mabdan, pretended to be a turncoat and offered his services to Kaladin, who, appreciating his own deviousness and thinking all men like him in that respect, accepted. Thus, by sleight of hand, was Jari able to substitute the bag containing the spittle for one like it, which contained nothing but a little melted snow. Then, to find out what Kaladin planned against the Mabdan, I had only to pretend to be still in his power, while Jari lost himself in the general confusion after the retreat from Caer Lud, following discreetly until we came to Eunice Scythe.
So I did see a smaller sail on the horizon earlier. It was your skiff, Jari?
Doubtless. And now, as to the other matter, I know that cats have a certain resilience men lack when it comes to containing the souls of other creatures. I remember a time once when my name was different and my circumstances were different, when a cat was used to great effect to contain, and in this case imprison, the soul of a very great sorcerer. But no more of that. My cat will carry you, Sactric. And I think you'll experience little discomfort.
A beast?
Sactric began to shake his mummified head.
As Emperor of Malaban, I could not.
Sactric, you know very well that soon, unless you get free of this plane, you and yours will have perished completely.
Would you risk that because of a small point of pride?
You speak too personally, dwarf. Why, if I were not bound by my word...
But you are. Now, sir, will you enter the cat so that we can leave? Or do you not require back that which I took from you?
I want it more than life.
Then, Sactric, you must do as Jari suggests.
There seemed to be no reaction from Sactric, save that he stared at the black and white cat in some disdain for a moment. Then the cat's fur stood on end, and it clawed at the air before subsiding. And suddenly, Sactric's mummy fell heavily to the ground and lay there in a tangled heap. Then the cat spoke.
Let us go quickly, and remember, I have lost none of my powers merely because I inhabit this body.
Ilbrek picked up the old saddle he had found and dusted it off.
We shall remember, Sactric.
The journey had been uneventful, with Ilbrek riding on Splendid Mane and guiding the ship on the shortest course to the mainland. And now they all stood upon a cliff above a white, angry sea. Gafanon raised his double-bladed war axe high above his head, using his one good arm, and then he drove the axe down into the turf, which had, until a few minutes earlier, been marked by a small cairn of stones. The extraordinarily intelligent eyes of the black and white cat watched Gafanon intensely, and sometimes those eyes seemed to burn ruby red.
Be careful you do not harm it.
I have still to remove the charm I laid, Sactric.
Having cut away the turf to expose a patch of earth measuring some 18 inches across...
Earth's protection be dissolved by...
The she-dwarf knelt over the patch of earth and ran some of the earth through his fingers. When he was done, he took out his knife and began to dig carefully in the soft ground. Gafanon found what he sought, and his face was screwed up in an expression of considerable disgust.
Here it is, Sactric.
And he withdrew from the ground, by its thin strands of hair, a human head, as mummified as Sactric's own had been, yet having an air not only of undeniable femininity, but also, strangely, of beauty. Though there was nothing evidently beautiful about the severed head, but there was plain adoration in the eyes of the little black and white cat.
Oh, Tirhali, has he harmed you, my love? My sweet sister.
And now the head opened eyes which were pure and clear and icy green, and the rotting lips moved.
I hear your voice, Sactric, my own, but I do not see your face. Perhaps I am still a little blind.
No, I have had to inhabit this cat for the nonce. But soon we shall be in new bodies. Bodies which can accept us on some other plane. There is a chance that we might escape from this plane at last, my love.
They had brought a casket with them from Eunice Scythe, and into this box of bronze and gold they now lowered the head. As the lid closed, the eyes stared from the gloom.
Farewell for the moment, beloved Sactric.
Farewell, Tirhali.
And that is what you stole from Sactric, Gafanon?
Aye, the head of his sister. It is all that is left of her. But it is enough. She has power equal to her brother's. If she had still been on Eunice Scythe when you went there, I doubt you would have survived it all.
Gafanon is right. That is why I would not leave this plane until she was restored to me. She is all that I love, Tirhali.
The black and white cat stared hard at the box, which the dwarf now tucked under his arm. Jari O'Connell reached up and gave the cat's head a sympathetic pat, and he brushed away an imaginary tear.
It is what they say, is it not, about even the worst of us having tenderness for something.
And now we must make haste for Craigdon.
Which way?
That way. East, towards the winter.
Coram had almost forgotten how fierce was the Foimiore winter, and he was grateful that they had come upon the abandoned village and found riding horses there and thick furs to wear, for without both, they would now be in a sorry plight. Even Ilbrek was muffled in the pelts of the Snow Fox and the Marten. 4 nights had passed, and each night seemed to herald a colder morning. Everywhere they had seen the familiar signs of the Foimiore victories. Ground cracked open as if from the blow of a gigantic hammer, frozen bodies twisted in the contours of agony, mutilated corpses of human folk as well as beasts, ruined towns, groups of warriors frozen on the spot by the power of Balar's eye, children ripped into a dozen pieces by the teeth of the hounds of Kerenos, the signs of that frightful, unnatural winter which was destroying the very grass of the fields and leaving desolation wherever the ice formed. Through deep drifts of snow they forced their way, falling often, stumbling frequently, and occasionally losing track of their direction altogether, blundering on towards Craig Doane, which might already be the graveyard of the last of the Mabdon. And the white snow continued to fall from the gray and endless sky, and their blood felt like ice in their veins, and their skins cracked, and their limbs grew stiff and painful, so that even breathing hurt their chests. And leading their horses, they were often tempted to lie down in the soft snow and forget their ambitions and die as they knew their comrades must have died already. At night, when they would light a poor fire and sit close to it, they would scarcely be able to move their lips to speak, and it seemed that their minds were as numbed by the cold as their bodies. Often the only sound would be the murmur of the small black and white cat as it curled beside the bronze and gold casket and spoke to the head within. And they would hear the head reply, but they would feel no curiosity concerning the nature of the conversation between Saktrik and Ter Hali. Coram was not sure how many days and nights had passed. He was merely faintly surprised that he was still alive when they came to the crest of a low hill and looked out across a wide plain over which fell a thin drift of snow. And there in the distance, they saw a wall of mist, and they recognized the mist for what it was, the mist which went everywhere that the Foemiore went, and which some believed was created by their foul breath, or which others thought was necessary to sustain the diseased lives of the cold folk.
We have come to the place of seven stone circles, the holy place of the Mabdon.
Their greatest place of power, Craig Doane.
I can hear the hounds of Kerenos.
And the people of the pines.
And the voices of the Foemiore.
This means that some of our comrades still live, Coram. The Foemiore would not remain so close to Craig Doane unless there was something to keep them here.
Aye, Jari. The Foemiore fear Craig Doane and would normally avoid the place at all costs. Gaynor revealed that when he thought he had trapped us there months ago.
Jari Arconal rode close to Coram on a horse which pushed wearily through snow which sometimes came up to its neck. Ilbrek rode ahead on Splendid Mane, driving a path through the snow which the others could follow. If it had not been for the She-Giant, their progress would have been much slower, and indeed, it was likely that they would never have reached Craig Doane before the cold consumed them. Gofannon went next, on foot as always, his axe over his shoulder, the box containing Ter Hali's head under his arm. His wound had begun to heal, but the shoulder was still stiff.
The Foemiore circle is complete. We shall not get through their ranks undetected, I fear.
Or unscathed.
Coram watched his own breath billow white upon the freezing air, and he tugged the thick furs tighter to his shivering body.
Could not Saktrik conjure some illusion for us that would allow us to pass through the besiegers without being seen?
Would be best to save the illusions for later, so that none will suspect the truth when the crucial moment comes.
I suppose that is wise. Then we must make a dash for it, I would say. At least they expect no one to attack them from beyond Craig Doane.
No one in their right mind would.
I do not think we are sane at present.
What do you think, Saktrik?
We would rather that my sister and I conserved our strength until the last moment. What you ask of us is considerable, for it is much harder to use our power away from Yunuskai.
I will go first to clear the path. Keep close behind me.
He drew the great blade Retaliator, and it shone strangely in the cold light. It was a thing of the sun, and the sun had not been seen on this plain for some long while. Warmth glowed from it, and it seemed to melt the snowflakes as they fell. And Ilbrek's ruddy face was full of golden radiance as he sped his horse.
On Splendid Mane. On to Craig Doane. On to the place of power.
The snow flew in huge clouds on either side of Ilbrek. And his comrades followed close behind, waving their weapons, both to sustain their spirits and to keep themselves as warm as possible as Ilbrek vanished first into the unnaturally cold Foimiore mist, leading the way to Cragdone. Then Corum had also entered this mist, keeping his eyes fixed as closely as he could on his gigantic comrade, and now he had an impression of huge, dark, bulky shapes moving through the mist, of hounds barking warnings, of riders with green-tinged skins trying to detect the nature of those who had suddenly charged into their camp.
Ilbrek! It is the giant, the she come to Cragdon! Rally, Golek! Rally!
I recognize that voice!
It was Prince Gaynor the Damned, whose fate was so closely linked to Corum's.
The hunting horns of the Golek!
Yet still, Corum could not see the pale beasts, with their blood-red ears and their hot yellow eyes. The beasts which his friend Gofanon feared above all other things.
Ah, that was the voice of Kerenos himself, answering Gaynor's warning.
As bleak and desolate as the plain from which those dying gods originated.
We can only hope that Kerenos' brother Balar is not close by, Jari. For Balar has only to direct his gaze upon us to freeze us for eternity.
Suddenly, Corum found his path blocked by four or five slack-faced creatures with skins almost as white as the surrounding snow. Creatures armed with thick-bladed flenches more suitable for hacking the carcasses of game than for fighting. But he knew that these were the favored weapons of the Golek, and it was Golek he faced now. With his moon-colored sword, Corum sliced about him, astonished at the ease with which the metal slid through flesh and bone.
This sword has indeed attained its full power, now that it has been named.
And though it was almost impossible to kill the Golek, he maimed his opponents so badly that they ceased to be any danger to him, and he was able to pass easily through their ranks and catch up with Ilbrek, who could still be seen ahead. Retaliator rising and falling like living flame and slaying pine folk and the few hounds who had so far answered the call of the Golek horns. For a while, in the exhilaration of battle, Corum was barely aware of the Foimiore mist he breathed, but slowly he realized that his throat and lungs felt as if ice formed solidly in them, and his movements were becoming more sluggish, as were the movements of his horse.
I am Corum. I am Krem Kruik of the Mound. I am Lo Arraint, the Silverhand. Tremble, lackeys of the Foimiore, for the Mavdin heroes have returned to the earth. Tremble, for we are the enemies of the winter!
And the sword called Traitor flashed and brought cold death to a snapping dog.
I have been where the soldiers of the Mavdin were slain.
While elsewhere, Gofanon whirled his axe with one hand in a circle of deadly metal.
I shall fight you through eternity!
And Jaria Conal, the black and white cat clinging to his shoulder, a blade in each hand, struck about him.
Now they are closing in from all sides. Balar and Gowen and the others must be close by. Once the Foimiore find us, we will be doomed.
But now, too, Corum could see the shadowy outlines of the first great stone circle of Cragdone, huge, rough-cut pillars which were topped by stone slabs almost as long as those which supported them. Seeing the great place of power so close gave Corum the extra strength to force his horse through the green-faced pine warriors who rode at him, to hack this way and that with Traitor, and draw sap-like blood which filled the air with the cloying stink of the pine tree. He saw Gofanon beset by a pack of white hounds go down on one knee, his black head thrown back. Corum burst into the pack, slicing at a throat here, a belly there, giving Gofanon time to rise and stumble into the sanctuary of the first circle and stand with his broad back against a granite pillar. Then Corum himself had reached the circle and was safe. Within seconds, Ilbrek and Jari had joined them, and they stood there, grinning at one another.
It is hard to believe that we still live.
Aye!
Ah, now we have them all! They will starve as the others starve.
But the booming, miserable voices of the Foimiore seemed to contain a note of concern, and the howling of the hounds of Kerenos had an uncertain quality to it. The Golek and the pine warriors who clustered on the outskirts peered at the four comrades with wary respect.
Now the Mavdin will rally and drive you away forever, Gaynor!
Are you sure they will rally to you, Corum? After you've turned against them? I think, my friend, that you will find them reluctant even to speak to you. For all that, they are near dead and you are their only hope.
I know of Kaladin's trick and what he did to destroy the Mabdan morale. I will explain this to American.
Gaynor's laughter cut deeper into Coram's spirit than could the sharpest of retorts.
Come, we have made it.
Slowly, the four heroes made their way through the archways of the stone circles, passing wounded men and dead men and mad men, and weeping men and men who stared unseeingly into space, until at last they came to the central circle, where a few tents had been erected and a few fires flickered, and men in broken armor, in torn furs, crouched shivering beside their tattered battle banners and waited for death. Amergin, slender, frail, very proud, stood beside the stone altar of Craigdone, where once he had lain after Coram had rescued him from Caerlud. Amergin had a gloved hand resting upon that altar now, as he looked up and recognized the four. His face was grim, but he did not speak. Then another figure emerged from behind the High King, a woman whose red hair fell to below her shoulders. There was a crown on her head, and she was clad in heavy chainmail from throat to ankle, a heavy bronze-buckled belt around her waist, a fur cloak upon her back. And her eyes burned green and fierce as she looked with contempt upon Coram. And it was Maeve, her hand upon the golden pommel of her sword.
Oh, Maeve, I have
brought... Monarch is dead. It is Queen Maeve now. I am Queen Maeve, and I lead the Tuatha Na Cruim Chruach. Under our High King, Amergin, I lead all the Mabden, those who are not already slain as a result of your monstrous treachery.
I did not betray you. You were tricked by Kaladin.
We saw you, Coram.
You saw a changeling. You saw a Carrick created by Kaladin for the very purpose of making you think me a traitor.
It is true, Amergin. We all saw the Carrick on Eunice Skyth.
Amergin raised his hand to his temple. It was plain that even that movement cost him dear.
Then we must have a trial, for that is the Mabden way.
A trial? At this time? He has proven himself guilty. Now he tells incredible lies. He thinks we are so dazed by defeat that we will believe them.
Maeve turned her back on Coram.
Maeve?
We fight for our beliefs, Queen Maeve. Just as much as we fight for our lives. We must continue to conduct our affairs according to those beliefs. If we do not, then we have no justification for living. Let us question these people fairly and listen to their answers before we judge them innocent or guilty.
Maeve shrugged her beautiful shoulders, and Coram knew agony then. He knew that he loved Maeve more than he had ever loved her before.
We shall find Coram guilty, and it will be my pleasure to deliver the sentence.
There was hardly a man or woman there who could stand unaided. Gaunt, frozen, half-starved faces looked upon Coram, and for all that they were familiar faces, he saw no sympathy in them.
Oh, judge me a turncoat, Ilbrick. They blamed me for the huge losses they sustained at Caerlud.
Aye, yet we knew this would happen.
Beyond the seventh circle of stones, the outer circle, the unnatural mist swirled, and Coram's trial began.
Perhaps I was mistaken in seeking allies on Eunice Skyth, and thus I am guilty of poor judgment. But of all else, I am innocent.
Morkian of the Two Smiles, who had only been slightly wounded at Caerlud, drew his dark brows together and fingered his moustache. His scar was white against his swarthy skin.
We saw you. We saw you riding side by side with Prince Gaynor, with the wizard Kaladin, with that other traitor, Gafanon. All riding together, leading the Pine Warriors, the Golech, the Hounds of Terranus against us. I saw you cut down Grinion Oxrider and one of the sisters, Kaleen, daughter of Milgan the White. And I heard that you were directly responsible for the death also of Fadrick at the Cregat Lith. That you lured him to his death when he thought you still fought for us.
I saw you kill many of our people, Coram. We all saw you.
Hisak, nicknamed Sun Thief, who had helped Gafanon forge Coram's sword, growled from where he sat with his back against the altar, his left leg in splints.
And I say that it was not I whom you saw. We came to help. We have been on Eunice Skyth all this time, under a glamour which made us think a few hours had passed, when really months had passed.
A folk tale. I cannot believe such childish lies.
Hisak, do you remember the sword that the one supposed to be me carried? Was it this sword?
And he drew forth his moon-colored blade, and strange pale light pulsed from it.
Was it this sword, Hisak?
Of course it was not. I should have recognized that sword. Was I not present at the ceremony?
You were. And if I had a sword of such power, would I not have used it in battle?
Probably. I admit...
And look!
Coram held up his silver hand.
What is that metal?
It is silver, of course.
Aye, silver. And the other, this Carrick, did it have a hand of silver?
I recall now that the hand did not seem to be exactly silver, more some kind of mock silver.
Because silver is deadly to the changeling, I'll know that.
This is merely a complicated deception.
But Maeve was no longer so sure in her accusations.
But where then is this changeling now? Why does one vanish and another appear? If we saw both together, we could be more easily convinced.
The Carrick's master is dead, Morkian. Gofanin slew him. The Carrick took Kaladin into the sea. It was the last we saw of both. We have already fought this changeling, you see.
Coram looked from weary face to weary face, and he saw that the expressions were changing. Most were at least prepared to listen to him now. Maeve pushed back her long red hair.
And why did you all return when you knew that the position was hopeless here?
What could we gain by aiding you? Is that what you mean?
I saw you riding with Kaladin also, Jarya Connell. Ilbrek is the only one here who is not evidently in league with our enemies.
We returned because we had achieved the object of our quest to Eunice Scythe and brought you aid.
Amergin looked hard at Coram.
Aid? Of the kind we discussed?
Of exactly that kind.
Coram indicated the black and white cat and the bronze and gold casket.
Here it is.
It does not take the form I expected.
And there is this. Doubtless brought in by some ship wrecked on the shores of Eunice Scythe. I recognized it at once.
And he displayed the cracked, ancient saddle he had found on the beach. Amergin stretched his hands towards the saddle.
I know it. It is the last of our treasures to remain unlocated, save for the collar and the cauldron, which still reside in Caer Lud.
Aye, High King. And doubtless you know the prophecy attached to this saddle.
I do not recall any definite prophecy. I was always puzzled as to why such an evidently useless old saddle was included in our treasures.
It is Laegaer's saddle. Laegaer was my uncle. He died in the last of the nine fights. He was half-mortal, you'll recall.
And he rode the yellow stallion, which could only be ridden by one who was pure in spirit and who fought in a just cause. So that is why this saddle has been preserved with our other treasures.
That is why. But I do not mention all this merely in order to pass the time. I know how to call the yellow stallion, and thus I might have the means of proving to you that Coram does not lie. Let me call the stallion, then let Coram try to ride the beast. If it accepts him, then you will know that he is pure in spirit and that he fights in a just cause. Your cause.
Amergin looked at his companions.
This seems fair.
Only Maeve was reluctant to accept Amergin's judgment.
Could be a sorcerer's trick.
I will know if it is. I am Amergin. Forget not that, Queen Maeve.
And Maeve accepted her High King's rebuke and turned away.
Let the space be cleared near the altar.
Ilbrek carried the saddle carefully to the great stone slab and placed it thereon. They stood away from the altar, on the fringes of the first circles of monoliths, and they watched as Ilbrek turned his golden head towards the cold sky and spread his huge arms, so that what little light there was gleamed on his red-gold bracelets, and Coram was suddenly impressed anew by the power emanating from this noble, barbaric god, the son of Mananan.
In all nine great fights did Laegaer struggle. Small though he was, his bravery was huge. No she fought better nor with more cunning for the cause of the Mabdin race. Laegaer was his name of undying honor. Though modest he was, he rode the yellow steed. And he led the charge at the place called Sleaf Gullion. The few warriors then remained. The battle was won, but Goimspear had found him. Laegaer lay in his own warm wet blood. His head upon his saddle, his death drew near. While his yellow horse wept bitter tears. you man her Lager when he named his heir. Calling to the oak and the alder to see, he said that he owned but his life and his steed, and his life to the Mabden he gave. Lager granted freedom to great yellow stallion. There was only one thing he must do in return. If again old knight threatened, he would be a pure champion and fight for the Mabden cause. Lager told each witness to take up his saddle, a solemn reminder of his noble oath, saying he who could sit it could prove to be true, that the stallion would know his own. In fair summer fields the stallion still grazes, waiting the coming of great Lager's heir. Now in Lager's name we entreat him come, conquer old knight again.
Now Ilbrek sank upon his knees before the altar on which the old cracked saddle stood. None moved. Ilbrek remained where he was, his head lowered. They waited.